Hello and welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. This is a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in, because if you ever wondered what was happening inside of those rooms, you're going to find out right now. Tonight, we're talking young people and recovery, and my friend Jen is back to share with us her experience, strength, and hope. And how are you, Jen?
I'm great.
Good. Welcome back.
Thanks.
All right, so a little bit about what it was like and what it's like now. What's with the big smile?
I just like to smile. So I guess I'll just start how we normally start.
You can start however you want. It's fine.
My name is Jen, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jen. Welcome.
Thanks. And what we do, I don't know if anyone out there has never been to an AA meeting, but just to make a small thing about what we do in meetings is that we generally talk about what it was like when we were drinking, what happened, and what it's like now that we're sober. So I'll do that.
Yeah.
So what it was like for me was that I had my first drink. I thought it was kind of late. It was my first week of my freshman year of high school, and I had been planning on drinking for years, but my dad was sober at the time, and I thought that if I ever drank, he would find out and throw me into a treatment center. So I was too scared to ever drink alcohol because I thought for sure he would find out. So I made it so that I could drink about 2 hours away from my hometown, and it was safe. The parents that were, the parents of my friends didn't care if we drank. It was, at the beach, and it was very whatever. Mm-hmm. You're young, everyone drinks. And so we went to the beach, and I was very excited. I had wanted to drink for so long. And we went to the beach, and we went to this bonfire, and everyone was older, and mostly people were seniors in high school, so it was very cool. And I don't remember what we were drinking, but I'm sure it was something really cheap. And I remember getting up at some point to go to the bathroom, because that's what you do when you're drinking. You go a lot. And it was in these bushes, and I was going to the bathroom, and I had this thought. I started laughing, and I had this thought, like, oh, I totally get why people drink now. Because at that point, I was 13 years old, and I was pretty miserable. I was a normal 13-year-old, but at the same time, my parents had been going through this really long, drawn-out divorce, and my family life was really not a happy home. And so when I realized for the first time that I was drunk when I was going to the bathroom, it was like this incredible feeling of relief that I'd never felt before in my entire life. And I thought, like, wow, I totally get it. This is why everyone told me to be careful if I ever drink, because it is
you're going to pee in the bushes if you drink? Or
no, it's the answer. And so anyways, I ended up blacking out, and my poor friends had to carry me on the beach, which is hard. Even though I was really small, it's hard to carry people on the beach. And I went to my friend's house to go to bed, and I ended up wetting the bed and woke up in the middle of the night and moved the mattress down the hall and switched it out with another one because I didn't want anyone to know I wet the bed. So I went to bed, and it was no problem, and the next morning I woke up and I thought, wow, I can't wait to drink again. That was so cool. I'm so cool. Oh my God, I'm totally going to do this all the time. And, the next weekend I was drunk again, and it started out really innocent, innocent in that, the next weekend when I was drunk, I had to go get stitches and blacked out again, and
no drama, just
just like normal 13-year-old life, and for me. And so it was like a weekend thing, and
Trevor's here.
All right, hi Trevor. And so it was pretty, I was the kind of kid in high school who was very concerned about what everyone thought about me. So I had the three different lives kind of going on. I had the drinking on the weekend, and then I had the I'm a part of campus ministry, and I play sports and do that thing. And then I can't remember what the third one was. So maybe there was just two, but I was very careful about the way that people saw me. And At some point when I was a senior in high school, I just, you know, I had won like the campus ministry award and I was like friends with everybody. And I was like, you know, nominated for like homecoming queen and like all this.
You're two different people.
And on the weekends, I was like, you know, messing around with my friend's boyfriends and, you know, fantasizing about killing myself. And there's actually this road in where I grew up where there was like it was a cliff. And if I would drive on it pretty much every day and I would think and it would if we went over the cliff, you went into this really wealthy family's house. And I would think, wow, that would be so cool. That would be such a story if I just like drove my car over the cliff. And I would think about it pretty much every day. So at some point in my senior year of high school, I just decided, you know what? I don't want to do this like second life anymore. I'm just going to drink and I'm going to have fun. And like, that's what I did. I just started drinking every day and it was fun for a while. I mean, you know, it was fun because I was drunk all the time. I didn't have to think about like what I did the night before or how my best friend wouldn't talk to me anymore or, you know, like how my mom was really concerned and, you know, stuff like that, or how I didn't have a relationship with my father, or like any, I didn't have to think about any of that. But it was enough that like, I was also the kind of person when I drank that I always wanted to stop drinking, because I hated a lot of the things that I did when I was drinking. Like I hated that I blacked out. I hated that I, messed around with my friend's boyfriends. I hated that I would tell people, say really mean things to people. You know, I really wanted to be like the girl who, you know, got all A's and played soccer and like, you know, was like perfect and could have a couple of drinks. Like,
right. You wanted to be able to drink like a lady, but you still had a lot of the self-loathing going on because of the stuff that was happening to you in a blackout.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, I decided that, when I went to college that I was going, I decided to go like to the number 4 party school in the country.
Good move.
Totally great move. And like that was how I made my decision.
They give you fake ID when you show up, right? Like, here
no,
you go.
I looked a little
money.
Too young. but when I went to college, I decided that I was going to turn over a new leaf, and I was going to like get, I was going to get all A's. I was going to quit smoking.
How'd that work out?
Drinking. it lasted, I don't know, 10 hours.
It was a 10 hour new leaf. Yeah.
And my first night in college, I was in a blackout within like an hour of drinking. And I woke up the next morning and there was glass everywhere in my room because I had somehow dropped the 40s that I was drinking. I don't know. I was in a blackout. And
what's
and
next, was, Mad Dog? I mean, what?
Whatever you can find when you're 18, you know? And that was what college was like for me. Like, yeah. I had already decided that I didn't care about, you know, what I look like on the outside. And so I could just do whatever I wanted. But at the same time, like, I still had that, like, thought, like, oh, well, I just need to be, I really need, if I just had a boyfriend or if I just went to class, I would get all A's, or if I just did this or if I just did that. And I would, like, every day I would think about how I was going to quit drinking, and I would generally, like, this is how my days went, actually.
Well, you know what, Jen?
Yeah,
we're going to talk about it.
We're going
to come back. Yeah, all right. One more time, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. And hey, if you want to connect with us here at the show, you can visit us online 24 hours a day at www.steppinoutradio.com. While you're there, do make a point of signing up on our free newsletter and shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. We want to know how we're doing. Jen, you were just, you know, you went to college and you took you with you, is pretty much the story goes. And you were kind of about to illustrate what a day in the life looked like when we took a break. So what did that look like for you? You know, you started out, you're going to turn over a new leaf that lasted for about 6 minutes. I think it was how it went, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah, it wasn't, wasn't really a day in a day in the life of Jen. It was, go to bed around 5 or 6. I had a roommate who liked to ski because I was living in Colorado and, you know, everyone went skiing, except me. I think I went one time while I lived there. And she would get up to go ski, and I would meet her in the room numerous times while she was getting ready to go ski, and then I would sleep with full intention of getting up to go to class, but then I would wake up at 3 or 4 and I would feel really bad about myself. And then I would think, maybe I should go to AA today. And then I would think, no.
Well, did you go to AA before then? I mean, was there any
I went with my family when my dad was in
AA. Oh, okay. But so you had a little bit of exposure to it in the past.
Yeah, I knew it was there. And it was something I thought about pretty much every day.
Oh, okay.
But I thought I would do it when I was in my 40s or 50s, not when I was
you had a
19
plan?
Years old. Yeah, I totally had a plan. So anyways, my days were not really great. And I would usually be afraid to leave my dorm room because I would be scared about who I would see, and I would have little flashbacks in my mind about things that I had did. And
scared because your behavior the night before?
Because of my behavior the night before. Okay. And, inevitably I would see someone and they would say, oh, my God, you were so crazy last night, or do you know what you did, or I can't believe you did this, or it was just kind of like a vicious cycle. And so anyways, I kept trying to devise these plans to not drink. So I would use drugs for a little while.
There's a plan.
Right. Because when I used drugs, I didn't get, I didn't black out and I wasn't crazy in
my
mind.
What kind of drugs?
I smoked a lot of pot, acid, mushrooms, mild things. I guess I shouldn't say that on the radio. But, but it never worked. And then I would go out. I would go out sometimes. And this is actually a pretty good example of how I tried to control it. One night I put the number 3 on my hand.
Three. Okay.
Because 3 drinks was kind of perfect. Whenever I had 3 drinks, I was a little bit, I felt the effects of alcohol and I didn't have the need. It wasn't before I had alcohol that it was like, oh God, I need to get drunk tonight. I had 3 drinks and it was perfect. I would be a little bit happy, but I could never stop at 3. But anyways, I put the number 3 on my hand and I ended up at when I got to 3, I thought, oh, well, I can just have one more. And then the next thing I know, I'm in a blackout. And, then the next thing I know, I'm walking home at, 6 in the morning. And actually, I was running home because I thought someone was following me or something. So, it just never really worked out. But what I learned when I got sober in AA was that there's this thing that people talk about in AA is that what we have is an allergy to alcohol. And that when we have one drink, something gets activated. You could call it an allergy. That's what we call it. And you can't not have another one.
So in retrospect, the problem wasn't the third. It was actually the first. That's
exactly.
Yeah. But you didn't know that then.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that if I had one drink, I was probably going to black out no matter what I tried to do. Mm-hmm. And no matter what I was wearing, no matter who I was with, no matter where I was at, it was probably going to happen. Even if I had a midterm the next day, which happened, and I missed a midterm and I pretended like I was pregnant so that
I'm sorry.
So that I could get a sick note.
What do you do? Did you go in with a really big with a pillow under
your shirt? No, I
ooh, look what happened.
I was like, I've been throwing up all morning and I'm just very concerned, and so he gave me a sick note. Anyways, yeah. So and it wasn't even the best part was that it wasn't actually a big deal that I missed a midterm because I don't know, 30 other people had missed it, so the professor I didn't have to lie, basically is what I'm saying. But anyway, so life wasn't really great, and but at the same time, when I look at my journal entries from then, they're all about how happy I was and how my life had never been so great. And there's a couple reasons for that. And one is that I was convinced everyone was going to read my journals, so I wanted them to think that I was really happy. And two is that I kind of, in a weird, perverse way, kind of was, because I got to drink all the time, what more could I have asked for? For the first time in my life, I just got to have fun, and I thought that I was the kind of person who just really liked to have fun. I knew how to have fun more than most people. And so it just seemed it was the thing that I was supposed to be doing. But, I didn't go to class. I didn't learn anything. I was getting a 0.6 GPA. I was sleeping with a different guy, all the time. And I was dating this guy, but he didn't know we were dating. you know, like it was just like not a happy time. And
point six, what did your parents say about that?
Well, I tried to not let them find out, but my mom somehow called and got, you know, parents aren't supposed to get your grades when you're in college, but my mom figured out a way to get it. So, yeah, she was a little mad. You know, I was going to go back the second semester and get better grades. And
turning over a new leaf.
I don't remember what my grades were my second semester. They were better, yeah. But I also took easier classes. So, and they started in the nighttime.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, so it was just like, it was a constant, you know, New Year's was like, this is it. I'm like not going to do all these things. And, you know, immediately I was doing all these things. And it was just, over and over again, the same story over and over again. And basically to fast forward, what happened was I was always looking for a solution besides quitting drinking, right? Which, of course. And I thought if I just got a boyfriend, everything would be fine. And so I met this guy, and he was in a fraternity and he worked in a bar and he was like
perfect.
The perfect guy. And we like started talking on the phone. It was great. And he was my boyfriend. But he worked a lot, so I never got to see him. And my drinking didn't stop. I wasn't like sitting at home Friday night and Monday night watching a movie with him. It was actually opposite. Like I was out drinking with him or something. So anyways, he was working at this bar and I had started drinking at like 2 p.m. This day. And I was also, my nickname was Keg Stand because...
I'm sorry. I'm just looking at you. I'm not seeing the keg stand.
And I was like 110 pounds.
Oh, that's great.
Maybe less. I don't know. I didn't eat very much either. And I started.
I think that was actually one of the things on the, you're an alcoholic when your nickname is Keg Stand.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. I didn't see that one. Anyways, it was actually kind of like a badge of honor for me because I beat this girl out at a party.
All right. We're talking to my good friend Jen, a.k.a. Keg Stand. College was rough for you, wasn't it?
It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. You know what was cool about what you were talking about? Like keeping that journal together and like kind of living this whole lie. Like you really thought that somebody might pick it up and God forbid they knew you were hurting. You know, I think that's kind of very telling about where you were at with your disease at that time.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, but it's pretty powerful, you know. I think I hate to bring back a dark memory, but I think it's pretty powerful to talk about it. But you got, you know, sure can pick them. You got yourself a bouncer in a bar and a fraternity brother.
Yes.
Oh, nice, nice. So you got unlimited access to green alcohol parties, and you can get in any bar you want, right?
Exactly. It was
good.
Great.
Perfect.
So, anyways, I had started drinking this day at around 2 p.m.
Right.
And I had done a keg stand.
Keg stand.
And after I did the keg stand,
you know, you're not going to
actually.
Shake
someone
that, right?
had pushed me off the keg stand. Uh-oh. Because I was taking too long, and so I got kind of in a fight with someone, and then I decided that I was going to go.
What did you
so
do?
Pathetic. I decided I was going to go visit my boyfriend at the bar he was working at, but I was 19 years old, and I looked like I was 13 or 14, and I didn't have a fake ID, but I was going to go visit him anyways. And
I'd proof you right now.
Yeah, no kidding. one of my friends tried to like get me to not go, and I, you know, slapped her, and I just like, you know, whatever. I just like was going to go to the bar
a
to see him.
A little belligerent, yeah.
Because we hadn't seen each other all week, and whatever. I hadn't seen him really ever. So, but he's my boyfriend. So anyways, I went to this bar and the bouncer let me in because I was his girlfriend, the guy's girlfriend. And anyways, I was in a blackout. The only thing I remember is taking a couple shots. I was in a blackout when I went to the bar, and I, you know, went in a blackout again, like right after I took the shots. And then the next thing that I remember was that I was in a police station and I was trying to break out of jail by pounding on the metal bars. And
how was that working for you?
It wasn't working. Like I said, I was like 110 pounds and they had taken my shoes.
Not like a very, very large threat to the
right.
local police authorities. Yeah.
Right. And so I was, my back was bleeding.
Oh God.
I was crying. I wanted to talk to my mom, and I really wanted a cigarette. And I was telling them, I was yelling that I had watched TV and you could smoke in jail. And
I know my rights.
Right. And exactly. And everyone else, it was like it was a drunk tank, and everyone else had been, they were allowed to like sit and watch TV, and I was in my own personal cell because I was being belligerent. And the whole reason why I got put into jail was because this is all, I don't know any of this. This is all from what people have said. I got kicked out of the bar, and they had to call the police, and I was crying, and I had a warrant out for my arrest on a failure to appear in court on another drinking thing, and so I got taken to jail. And I thought it was really funny, like. I mean, this is kind of where I was at. Like, I woke up the next morning when I had finally gotten home, and I thought, that is so cool that I went to jail. Like, I can't wait to tell everyone I know. And I called my boyfriend. I was like, I went to jail. And he was like, well, do you remember what else you did? And he, you know, anyways, I had gotten him fired from his job and two other people fired from their job.
That night?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Because I was a minor drinking in their bar. And the cops had come, and they got a fine and everything. So he didn't want to ever talk to me again. And my life was kind of over because I was in love with him. And I was very upset. And it was kind of the first time that I had, like, a real consequence for my drinking, even though I had so many before. But it felt like the first consequence. And so I was really sad, and I wasn't going to drink anymore. And, you know, the cops were telling me that I was going to, like, have to go to jail for a week, or, you know, I was just like, everything felt like it was over. My life was over. And, you know, like 2 days later I was drunk, you know, and, I went a couple days after that to, a parole guy, or what, not parole guy, but like a court appointed therapy person or whatever. And he told me, he put me on a breathalyzer every day. So every day I had to go and take a breathalyzer, or blow into a breathalyzer, and prove that I was sober. And I had to do it for 30 days. So I proceeded to just, like, smoke a lot of pot and do a lot of acid and do a lot of mushrooms. And I told everyone I was sober. And I really thought I was, and I was, like, counting down the days until the 30th day. And
except for the acid, I'm
right,
really
sober.
Right,
stone cold sober. And actually, you know, I got a job, and I was going to the job, and I got an A on a paper in one of my classes, and I was going to class. Like, it was very cool. I was very excited, and I really felt like I was sober. And anyways, around, like, the 28th day or the 27th day, I really was starting to want to drink again. Like, I just really wanted to. And so I devised this plan with one of my friends that if I drank until 9 o'clock at night and didn't take the breathalyzer the next day until 4, no alcohol would be in my system and I would be fine. But as I was saying earlier, I don't know how to stop drinking once I start drinking. And it really is the first drink for me. And so when 9 o'clock came around, I was in a blackout, and the blackout lasted until, you know, around 4 or 5 in the morning. And, you know, what happened that night is, I don't know, obviously, because I was in a blackout. I didn't even come to at any points, but, you know, I yelled at all kinds of people. I messed around with this guy that I used, you know, he was my boyfriend, but he wasn't, just in my thoughts. And, you know, I went around this party with, like, my shirt on inside out and backwards, and my pants were, like, not buttoned, and my shoes weren't tied. And I was, like, dirty all over because I had fallen so many times, and I was bleeding. And one of my friends, like, tried to rescue me or something. Anyways, one of my friends actually did rescue me and put me to bed in his room. And when I woke up the next afternoon in his apartment, he looked at me with this look of complete disgust. And he just was like, you know, you only had a couple days until you could drink, you know, because I only had a couple more days taking these breathalyzers. Mm-hmm. And he was like, why couldn't you wait a couple days? And, you know, it was just like my purse. I lost my purse. My bra wasn't on. My underwear wasn't on. Like, it was just like I was late to work, you know, that job that I had got. And I just, it was like kind of a really horrible feeling. And I was also still kind of drunk, so it was also still funny. But as I started to like sober up, it wasn't funny anymore. And when I got home to my apartment, there's a message on the machine that I had been fired from my job because I didn't, it was this really important thing and I didn't show up for it. And, you know, I did what I knew to do and I got high and I thought it was, and I laughed about everything. And I went to go take the breathalyzer because I thought for some reason like it would be out of my system. I don't know what I was thinking. And it was the alcohol in my system was still really high and I failed it. And it just was like the guy behind the counter was like, that's really bad. You know, I mean, it just felt like the end of the world. And so, I, like I said earlier, I had actually my sisters were both sober at the time, too. And so was my dad. So I called my sister and told her that I thought I needed to go to treatment. And I didn't actually want to go to treatment. I didn't want to stop drinking, but I was so scared about how much trouble I was going to get in. For
was she like, did she know, did she have an inclination that you were not doing well?
Not really, because I was really good at living the two lives going on. So
yeah, because you were away from home and you kind of off the radar. You
yeah,
were
and
able
she's
to
much
it.
Older and she hadn't lived at home. We hadn't lived at home together for a long time at that point. So
sure.
So yeah, and I was really good at pretending when I would go and see my sober family, I'd be like, oh, I'm going out for coffee tonight with my girlfriends. You know, I was really good at lying about
all right.
What I was
doing. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. And one more time, if you or someone you know is having a hard time with drinking, AA is available. You can visit the website at www.aa.org. Just pick up a local phone book and look for Alcoholics Anonymous. And in case you just joined us, we were speaking with Jen, and Jen, it sounded like it got pretty bad and you were, you know, reaching out to your family who you just shared with us was in recovery at the time. You said your sister was and your dad as well?
And my other sister.
And your other sister.
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, you knew that AA existed. You
yes.
knew that it actually worked. You had some success, I guess.
Yes.
And some successful role models.
I had seen that it changed people's lives and that yeah. people had gotten better.
And what we were talking about was I was curious if you were able to keep it a secret from your family, and it sounded like you did a pretty good job of it while you were away at school,
mm-hmm.
and they had no idea. So your sister was kind of like, well, where's this coming from when
right.
you called?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened next?
What happened next? I left school and went to a treatment center about a week later, so I had a good time until then. And went to this treatment center and cried like the whole time before from leaving school to going to the treatment center uncontrollably. And I got to the treatment center and I was 19 and everyone was in their early 30s and they seemed really old to me also because they were extremely low bottom alcoholics and drug addicts and they had been.
Were they older?
Well, they were in their 30s, so they seemed
yeah.
a lot older. I was 19. So anyways, what happened for me at the treatment center was that a lot of them kept saying that they were like me when they were 19 and I saw them in their 30s and they had lost their children because of their drinking and their drug use and teeth and their lives were completely insane and I just thought, oh my God, I don't want to be like that. And I had like a small glimpse of the path that I was on. And when I was drinking, like I had this fantasy about my life and all I wanted was to get married and to a man who was really wealthy and I wanted to buy a house with a porch and on the porch I would get to drink all the time and I would have kids. And when I was in treatment and these women had children, I for the first time realized that like the path I was going on was not a good one. And I was my fantasy dream life of having kids was not going to be a good one. I wasn't going to be a very good mom. So that was kind of like, I mean, I was 19, so, you know, whatever. But that was my realization. And I went to treatment and I planned out my acid relapse that I was going to do when I got out of treatment because drugs were not my problem.
Right, because you were sober on acid.
Drinking was my problem. if I just needed, what I needed was self-esteem because I just had really low self-esteem and I had a really hard childhood and if I just got some self-esteem, then I would be able to drink again. And so anyways, I ended up relapsing on acid, and it was, you know, horrible, horrible, horrible. And so then I just smoked pot every day because I thought, you know, I could handle that. And because, you know, thinking, am I an alcoholic? Am I not? Am I an alcoholic? Am I not? For 48 hours is not fun. So that was when I stopped doing acid. And anyways, what happened was I was going to AA meetings every day, and I was telling everyone that I was sober, even though I was smoking pot every day. And I was incredibly lonely, and I had moved home at this point, and I was living with my dad and my stepmom, and I kept going to meetings. And I finally, one day, I went to this meeting, and it was a young people's meeting, and this woman, after the meeting, came up to me like she had always done, and she asked me how I was doing, and I said, oh, I'm great. Sobriety is so great. I love it. And then she said, you know, we'll stay for the business meeting. And in AA, we have these business meetings for each meeting to just kind of make sure that little thing, you know, that the coffee gets made and that there's an actual meeting. And you usually have to use, we have keys to open up the door and all that, you know, those little things. And she asked me to come to this business meeting, and I said, no, I can't, I can't. And she said, no, you should come. And I went to the business meeting, and I got this service position just announcing that the meeting had literature. It was that simple. And I had to bring literature to the meeting for people. And I went out that night, and I got high, and I thought about this literature position I had in AA for the entire time. And I woke up the next morning, and I decided that I was going to go and get this literature, and I was going to, like, be the perfect literature girl. And I haven't drank or gotten high since.
That's awesome.
You know, I think I really wanted to be a part of it. I just didn't really know how, and I was really lucky that people in AA, they helped me be a part of it without me, like, having to do it.
How old are you now?
I'm 27.
You're 27. And you got sober at what age?
19.
So you never drank legally?
I never drank legally. Not even in, you know, Mexico.
Not even in Mexico.
So very sad. No.
What was it like? I mean, I got to ask you. It's people are out there listening right now going, well, how the hell did you get through all the fun years and the party years and all that stuff without drinking? I mean, what was it like for you? Was it tough?
Yeah, of course, there's days where I wanted to drink and... you know, it felt like I was missing out. But at the same time, I met so many really amazing people in AA, and I had so much fun in AA sober that it kind of canceled it out. You know, I mean, there would be the days that I would feel like that weren't as many as the days that I was just having fun in AA. And I went back to college and got really good grades, and that felt really awesome. And you know, I moved across the country to New York, and that was a really cool thing to do. And I mean, all these things happened in my life that I couldn't have done when I was drinking. And so even though there was days when, you know, even like on my 21st birthday where I wanted to drink, but I didn't. And I went out to a bar and I had fun anyways. And, you know, even though there's those days, at the same time, I know and I recognize that the things that I have in my life today, like the things that I get to have in my life today, are way more than I could have had if I was drinking every day. I couldn't have had any of the things that I have today.
And those are?
Well, I graduated from college, which was a miracle.
That's awesome.
A miracle. And I did really well in school, which when I was drinking, I was convinced that I was stupid and I was never going to amount to anything. And I found out in sobriety that when you go to class and you take notes and you just try a little bit, it goes a long way. And that I wasn't stupid like I thought. And so I graduated from college. I've had some really fun and weird jobs, and I have a really great job now. And I got married to this really great person who isn't in a fraternity and doesn't drink every day.
Yeah.
And he's really amazing. And I think the biggest thing is just, and I always say this, is just that there's so much hope in my life today that, you know, it's hard being in your 20s, you know, alcoholic or not, drinking or not. You're going to have hard times when you're growing up. However, I've been given this thing in AA where I know that it's always going to get better. And that there's always a solution, and that, you know, whatever problems that I think I have, they're going to pass, and it's going to be okay. And that is a gift in itself, and that mm-hmm. I don't have to drink no matter what. And if I don't drink no matter what, it's definitely going to get better. But if I drink, you know, it may not be so great. And, you know, I'm happy that I get to grow up in AA and I get to be the person that I always wanted to be, but I just couldn't be because I was always getting drunk. So it's just a great, it's just a nice feeling to know that my life isn't over, that it's kind of just, it's always kind of just beginning. So
what do you want to say? We just have a minute or so left to the young people who are out there that, you know, are wondering if AA is for them, wondering if they're, you know, I guess you said it pretty eloquently before when you were talking about the amount of time and energy you spent wondering when you were in there, like, oh, my God, am I an alcoholic or am I not? What do you say to that, to somebody who's out there listening to the show tonight going, oh, my God, maybe I am? You know, what do you do?
I don't know. I mean, try to just drink one drink every once in a while and see how it goes.
Yeah, see how that works out, right?
I mean, I don't know, in AA people, if you're wondering if you're an alcoholic or not, you know, people make a joke like, well, go to the nearest bar and try some controlled drinking. And, you know, I tried controlled drinking every day of my drinking and it never worked. So I really don't know what to say.
No, I understand.
You're always welcome at AA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jen, thank you so much for being with us, really. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out.